Hey everyone, welcome to Entrepreneurship by Design with Dr. C. I'm your host, Dr. Caroline, and thank you so much for joining us today. Entrepreneurship looks different for everyone. How and why we start our business, challenges that occur, pivots we have to make, success we achieve, all while life is happening. That's why I love sharing these inspiring entrepreneurs with you and shed light that there is enough room for everyone to succeed and thrive, even if you're in the same industry. Today, I'm so honored because I have TJ Wei here with me today, and TJ is your very Asian, non-binary, gluten and dairy-free money habits coach. Z has over a decade's worth of experience in corporate America as an IT project manager and left a six-figure career to design Z abundant life through business. TJ is on the track to retire by 40 and wants to share the knowledge that got Z there with everyone. And I'm so excited to have you here today, Z.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. So I would love to just dive right in. And, you know, there's so much there and there's so much to unpack. But the first thing that I want to talk about is, how did you decide to leave corporate America and start your own business?
Oh, yeah. This is a decision that happened multiple times, actually. The first time I left, I was working a job where I basically had worked myself out of work, right? Like, my job was to make it more efficient and streamline things. And I always describe it as, like, when I get bored, I just start breaking things so that I can fix them. So at some point I got so bored that I was like, why do I just keep sitting here waiting for, like, that mode where people have, like, a fire they need me to put out? Because that was that's very much part of who I am, is I'm the planner or the person who can handle, like, an emergency very well. So I felt like I was being, like, kept for the purpose of being, like, somebody's emotional safety net for when something goes wrong. And I was like, I'm sitting here doing maybe like 10 hours worth of real work of, like, hands-on shit. And then I was like, well, then why do I just do this for one person? Why don't I go into consulting and do it for multiple clients at a time and not spend so much time sitting at my cubicle pretending to work? So that was in 2018. I quit without having anything lined up. I took the time to set up a website for my corporate consulting work. I did a few interviews, did a lot of networking, discovered that I actually really missed being, like, surrounded by people. And, like, because I describe myself, I'm definitely closer to the introvert side of the scale, even though you might consider me a little bit more extroverted than most introverts, which is a learned skill. Yes. And, like, that, it just didn't work out. Like, I panicked basically 3 months in and went back to working for someone else until I, like, landed in a toxic situation where I actually tried to commit suicide. So I came out of that and was like, is this my rock bottom? And I knew, like, we went got out of, like, this facility they put me in, and my roommate took me to watch Frozen 2, and she's singing about, like, the unknown and finding herself and things like that. And we finished this movie and I'm like, I have to quit my job. I don't know what that looks like, whatever it is, but all I knew was that what I was doing then was not right. And it took me another year before I actually took that step and left.
Yeah, no. And thank you for being so vulnerable too. And, you know, it's really interesting because sometimes one thing can really trigger that thought of, I want something to change. Like, this isn't the right path for me. I'm capable of so much, and why not do that for myself? And I'm so glad your roommate took you to see that movie. It's a beautiful movie.
Yes.
But, you know, there is something to say too, when we're in a dark place, and how do we come out of that, and how do we get the resources and the help we need? But being able to follow your dream and realizing that corporate wasn't for you. And, you know, I think some people focus on, well, I went to school, I did all these things, I have to do what society says, or, like, culturally too, just the expectations that a lot of families have for their children. I know parents in general, my parents were like, you need to go to school or get a full-time job or something.
Yep. Yes.
You can't just chill. But, you know, I think it's very interesting that it really triggered that thought of allowing you to go down the road of having your own business and really following your heart versus what maybe society expected as well. Yeah,
For sure. And my parents are immigrants, so I totally had this thought in my head, right? They were very much, you have to go to college, you have to get like a knowledge worker job, all of those things. And I didn't think my parents would approve that I started my own business. But I actually, and I, the first time I left my corporate job to start my own business, I hadn't been talking to my parents for like 3 months. And then I posted on Facebook that I like needed a financial advisor and all of these things to help me get started with my business. And my mom wrote just like this really supportive comment. I don't remember what she said, but it was like short and sweet and very supportive. And I was like, shit, she's not mad at me. Like, I totally thought that she would panic. So like that was I want to say that out loud for people, because as a Asian American first gen, that like you may come away with the same story that I had in my head, that like starting your own business wasn't an Asian parent approved activity, and you may be surprised.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you were pleasantly surprised. And what was that like just seeing that comment for you and maybe the thoughts that you had prior to that and starting your business and like getting that support?
That was very, it was like realizing that my mom had grown a lot as a person, because I think before I stopped talking to her at some point during like Christmas or something, I went home and I had a conversation with her about how like the Asian parent like modal is to constantly be criticizing because you're trying to get your kid to be like perfect or better, or you're always like to that next level, like it's never good enough. That's the refrain, and that's generally what us as kids receive. But I came back that year and I was like, listen, I know you're trying to like help me here, but there are positive ways to say these things. There are ways to say that and go, you know what, you were right, that wasn't for you, or something like that. There was she was telling me about like she wanted me to use like liquid eyeliner, and like I always get that on my under eye, and I told her no and she made me do it anyway, and then she found a negative way to affirm that I was right, and I was like, you know, like you could have just said I was right.
Where's the
So
fun in
like
that?
for her to give me a supportive comment, like I don't know if she heard what I said when I like had that conversation with her, or that she just grew on her own, but that really said to me, hey, I have to reassess what my parents are these days, right? Like who they were when I was a kid and who they are 10 years ago later is different.
No, absolutely. And I'm so glad though that they did change and like you were able to experience that because not everyone can say the same thing. And I'm curious, as we're talking about culture, how does your Asian American identity show up in your business now?
So this is huge for me because, and I think a lot of entrepreneurs will find this, especially after they've been on the journey for a couple of years, is that running your own business really helps you discover yourself. You learn a lot about what works for you and your working style, what kind of culture you want to have, what kind of clients you want to work with, all these things. And then especially if you work in online business where you're in social media, and these days like social media is all about like being vulnerable or sharing your story and things like that. Being Asian American is like this weird, this like cultural imperative to be super private, and that's not who I am. So it's a really big conflict for me to try to separate, because when I talk to somebody one-on-one or in a small group, I'm totally like, I will talk about anything. Like I mentioned my suicide attempt, I will talk about all sorts of shit. I'll tell you about my money, I'll tell you about like my sob stories, all of those. But writing it in social media or putting it in a video where anybody could see it was a huge struggle for me at first. And it's something that I'm really reconnecting with, not only from like how to be more public or be more comfortable with that and peel away that cultural imperative, but also to like reconnect with my Asian American heritage. I grew up in California in the Bay Area, so I was surrounded by Asians. My high school was like 80% Asian when I graduated. And then I moved to Arizona to go to ASU, and it's all white, and then we get actually a lot of Midwesterners and as transplants, because it's like cheaper to go out of state to Arizona than it is to stay in Illinois. So I ran into a lot of racism and like ignorance, right? Like not out of maliciousness or anything, but like complete ignorance. And that was my first experience with like all these like phrases that I thought were myths growing up, of like white people saying, hey, you speak English really good. Okay, first of all, correct grammar would be you speak it well. Okay.
Yeah. Well, like those kinds there. Of
things, they really get me, or like they didn't know, like they would ask me what my nationality was, even though they were asking what my ethnicity was. So those things, like I didn't realize until I started working with a coach that those had actually traumatized me. So yeah. This process of going into business was me realizing it's like a healing process and then reconnecting with that and wanting to be more connected to other Asian Americans and speak for them and be their voice.
Yes, no, and I'm sure there's so many that look up to you as well, and just sharing your voice and knowing that other people are not alone. And it's creating that community piece of understanding from a different perspective, from the same culture aspect as well, ethnicity, race, everything that happens within identity as well. It's not just one element. I think it's so different too. And there's so many layers as well, but being able to speak to that and just bring awareness. And I think the ignorance of people that might not know that ahead, like before, until they're exposed, but being able to share that education and being able, once we have that new knowledge, we can make different choices. We can say different things once we have that. But before, I think a lot of people, especially if they're coming from certain areas of the world, they might've never been exposed. And I'm so glad you're using your voice for good and really shining light on that as well.
Yeah, thank you.
I appreciate that. But since we're still on identity, I have to ask. So other people know, when it comes to when I was introducing you, non-binary, can you explain what that is for people who don't know as well, what that means?
Sure thing. So I always want to preface this because I don't feel fully embedded in like the queer community. So I'm not speaking for anyone else, that for me, non-binary is, and actually if anybody looks at my social media, I cosplay as Mulan during the reflection song where she wipes off half her makeup. And to me, that's like, that image is the epitome of what being non-binary is to me. Like the Disney movie where you're like, okay, here's the expected female gender role. But if you're like a little bit more masculine, you're more intelligent, whatever it is. Or if you are masculine and you're expected to be like super macho, like those are the gender roles that society assigns to us. And to be non-binary means that I embrace that I don't fit in one of those boxes, that I don't have to always be at any given point in time very feminine or very masculine. I don't have to do everything that is assigned to me, and I can choose to embrace on certain days that, like, we'll describe it as like embracing our femme, or like our femme comes out more, or our masculine comes out more. It's about living with that fluidity and just being whoever we feel like that day, instead of trying to fit into other people's expectations of what your gender should behave like.
Well, thank you for breaking it down for everyone as well. And, you know, I always learn something new from everybody. But I do think it's important to recognize what that means too, because it can mean different things for different people as well, like you were mentioning, but for how you feel too. And I'm curious, how has that impacted your day-to-day life? Has it impacted it in a good way or not so good?
It's interesting because I was just thinking the other day that, like, the more I've embraced the fact that I'm non-binary and labeled myself that way, the more my femme actually comes out.
Interesting.
The more I feel like I can own it and just be as extra as I want to be. Like, if I'm in the mood to put on a full face of makeup and dress really cute, then that's the mood. And there are definitely times where I'm like, I'm just going to be super androgynous, not do anything. Like, I couldn't be bothered, or I just feel more comfortable in like super baggy clothes or whatever it is. So it's, even though like embracing the non-binary thing might imply to some people that I'm like moving towards the androgynous, it really just like opens up that freedom to get to be whoever I want to be that day.
I love that. Well, thank you for sharing that. And I just have one more question and we'll move more into the business side. But so with pronouns, I know this is very important. Can you explain the importance of pronouns as well?
Yeah. So pronoun wise, I go by Z and Zer. For anyone who's like, what does that mean specifically? The answer is nothing. If you try to Google it, there's not like a, hey, they use this specific spelling for their pronoun, therefore they are XYZ in sexuality or gender identity or anything. It's just a way to remove ourselves from the he, she thing of the gendered part of the language. And I purposely don't use they and them, because for me personally, using they and them for other people like hurts my brain a little. Like, and I find it a little jarring, even though I've recently learned historically that there are like several famous authors that used to go by they and them, and then history erased that knowledge. Like, because no, like I was reading, there's a meme that said like Shakespeare and Chaucer and Jane Austen all went by they them. And I was like, well, nobody in my English classes ever said that shit.
Like, yeah, I've never heard that.
Exactly. So I'm like, okay, well, we're still trying to erase this, right? So I felt like they, them, at least for me, my perspective on it, because I really love how language evolves and I love paying attention to it, is that like they, them is that inobtrusive, like half out kind of way of saying that you're different. And I kind of like the Zizer thing, partly because it sounds a little bit more Chinese, and then also because it's like it stands out more. Like, I like the uniqueness. I like that it's not just another part of our old language that could easily be like ignored, right? Mm-hmm. So the importance of pronouns is more to help people realize that like there's something else that you need to ask about, or that there like there's something different going on here that you shouldn't just apply your normal social norms to it. And they don't have to be super heavy or obtrusive, because generally when you're talking one-on-one with someone, you don't even need to use their pronouns, so it shouldn't be a burden.
Exactly. Yeah, no, and I mean, it was very unique to me because I had never seen the pronoun Zinzer. So I was like, oh, what's this? This is so interesting. It's like the curiosity, at least for me. But I think it's just people being more curious versus like assuming or making judgments about something. I think it would be a better world.
But it's harder to do, but it would be better.
Yeah. You know, a work in progress.
Yes.
To say the least. But I'm curious. So I want to jump into really what you've been doing in business, because I love the fact that you did leave corporate America and you found your own passion in life. But what, when you started your business, when you like you were reaching out on posts and finding like what you needed to run your business, what was that process like to get you to here today?
So when I left corporate America, I thought I was just going to basically do the same thing, but for like be my own boss about it, have my own contracts, all of that. And some of that is true, right? I got on Upwork, I was taking small gigs, I was doing projects, and I'm subcontracted with somebody as an organizational change manager, which I also have a certification in. So that's actually where a lot of my current revenue stream comes in. So I like to be transparent, because people make assumptions about where people's money comes from. That's where most of my business revenue comes from, still working in corporate America, but because I'm an independent contractor now, I get to set my own hours, I get a lot more boundaries. And that's not something that magically happens, by the way. You don't go into business and suddenly like boundaries just happen on their own. You have to choose them. Yes, otherwise you just translate them over from your old life. But I did make that conscious decision. So that gives me some more freedom, because that side of the business pays well enough that then I can spend 50% of my time marketing as a money habits coach for Asian American business owners to help them escape the hustle culture life and build their own abundant life through better money habits. So that's been a lot of social media, networking, meeting a whole lot of other cool business owners that are doing great things, either collaborating with them, hiring them, all of those things to get me to where I am now, where I'm comfortable talking about what I do. And I'm constantly evolving how I help people in their business. And I'm actually recently putting out a money mentorship offer where people just get, they pay for 3 months worth of access to my brain, because in my intro, you said I'm retiring by the age of 40, and there's a lot that goes into it. Like, there's some that's like generational wealth. I was lucky that my parents and my grandparents like set us up for success and things like that. But I also have like real estate investment know-how, stock investment know-how, how to optimize for generational wealth, because I am the product of it. And I'm actually recently signed on as a columnist for Mogul Chic magazine to talk about generational wealth. So like all this stuff sits in my brain, and it's hard to put it into like one neat offer where it's like, oh, this is the topic we'll talk about. So I gave up and I was like, just pay to have access to me during business hours. Ask me whatever questions you want, and I will answer them for you based off of your circumstances.
Oh my gosh, I love it. So speaking of general wealth, like, and I know money habits is your thing, but like with general wealth, what has been some of the things that you've learned over the years of like how people have created general wealth?
So
Generation wealth.
generational wealth. It's a lot of planning. It's pre-planning stuff. Like the whole concept of like time in the market is more important than how much you invest and things like that are so true. Right? I saw a post the other day. It was something like if you invested a little under $3,000 the day your child is born and never touched it again, then they would be a millionaire by 60.
Wow.
Right? Like things like that. Just knowing those things. My mom put me on her credit cards when I was a kid. So I would build credit without even, like, I didn't have the credit card, but she
Right.
put me there so I could have credit.
Right.
Versus some of my peers didn't have credit until after college. And
Yeah.
that, like, that's a whole thing that reduces how long it takes for you to then qualify for a loan for your house or things like that. So there's a lot of that you can do for your kids. And another aspect I like to talk about is like taking care of yourself is part of the generational wealth. Of like when my parents told me, "Hey, we're retiring," I was still really concerned because they were supporting my grandmother and my brother. And I was like, "Wait, what?" Then they showed me their investment portfolio and I was like, "Oh, you could have bought my house 12 times over." Like that reassurance that I wouldn't have to worry about them, my grandparents, my brother, or like when, like just in general, that I don't have to worry about them, right? Because the agreement when I went to college was that they would help me through college and then I would go back and help them with retirement. Turns out I don't have to, right? Like I was given the gift of freedom to focus on my own wealth building and not worry about whether or not I have enough to cover everybody.
It's so interesting. Some of the things you were saying, like I didn't know, but I'm really grateful because my parents did the same with the credit card, built up credit, and I'm like, oh, I can do this, I can do that. I'm like, I mean, now I'm in my 30s, but like prior to that, I had no idea, and like I didn't have access to the credit card. I just knew it was building that credit for me. But you're right, like these are such important factors, and we'll definitely link that below where you're going to be a columnist so we can have that and you can learn more. But
Yes.
I'm curious, what are some money habits that would be really useful for everyone listening to that you've adopted and teach your clients as well?
So if you're still in your 9 to 5, then I suggest taking advantage of just automation with your money in general. Like I'm big on the less you have to think about it, the better off you are. So if you're still in your 9 to 5, you have direct deposit. Take advantage of the 401k that at least up until the match that your employer gives you. If they don't give you a match, then they're like, it depends on your circumstances. And then outside of that, also use that direct deposit. If they let you split it up to land in multiple accounts, at least split it up so some of it lands in a savings account and you never see that money. And this is actually advice that I got from my 5th grade elementary school teacher. She was just like, never see this money. She taught us how to balance checkbooks, by the way.
Wow, what a great teacher.
Yeah, so I was very lucky, right, in terms of the like financial knowledge that was just like downloaded into my head from really young. So that is my advice for if you are still employed and or if like you're an S corp and you're paying yourself through payroll, you can do the same thing. Otherwise, if you're a business owner, one aspect of money that we don't tend to put much focus on is the cash flow management side of it, of paying attention to when you get money in the door from a sale, whether or not you're setting aside taxes for your income taxes, sales tax, rental tax, whatever it is, right? You need to set that money aside so that you can pay Uncle Sam and not be surprised at the end of the calendar year. I follow this one real estate investor. She had sold a whole bunch of properties last calendar year, and then her taxes came in and she owed $11,000 that she did not have. So, like, that's the kind of thing I want to help people avoid being surprised by those things. So that's like one of the main things, but also like separate out, okay, how much are your fixed expenses? How much are you going to pay yourself? How much are you going to have for like those surprise one-time expenses? And really like think those through. And it takes some intentionality, and there are processes that you can learn to like decide what's most important to you, how much you're going to set aside, and then like put some boundaries around that process. And it's great to do to help you appreciate how much you're making because usually you pay your bills out of the same account that you get your money in, and then you actually never know how much you actually made until you do your books and who's really paying attention to their spreadsheets or anything. And then it helps with when you do eventually hire a bookkeeper, a VA, somebody else who's going to be managing the cash in your business, that there's already a process in place and you can hand it off. And it'll be easy for you to double check that everything's good because you know what that process looks like.
Those are phenomenal tips. Thank you for those. I'm sure that's going to be really helpful for a lot of people. And you're right. You know, I used to like, my mom was really good about this where like we would have separate accounts and like my check, like even if I was like working at like the local gymnastics gym, I would have like percentages in each little account I had. It wasn't a lot.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. When I was like 16 or something.
Yeah. And that brings up a point because I think some people have this anxiety about having multiple bank accounts. Mm-hmm. I want to let people know that large Fortune 500 corporations have hundreds of accounts. So if they're doing it, it's for a reason. And there should be no reason we can't replicate that in small business.
Absolutely. No, I'm glad you said that too. And I'm curious because you mentioned earlier with boundaries, like having boundaries with your money and like the accounts and everything. Could you speak a little more to that?
Yeah. So my model, so I call it abundance first. We set aside like certain percentages in each bucket, right? And then when you go to make a payment or like, hey, there's a new coach that you wanna hire or this shiny new tool you wanna use, my boundaries are if it's not in that bucket for that unexpected one-time expenses, then I have to either wait until I make enough to get that bucket up to that number that I need before I make that purchase. Or if there's like, for some reason, I have to have that now, at least I've like stopped and recognized that I'm breaking the rules, right? That I'm like, oh shit, I have to borrow this money from elsewhere. So then when I go to borrow it, I have a whole process where, first of all, if there's cash sitting in like my Stripe account or PayPal, I like do all of those and put them in the bucket early and do the same process I would if I, on my regular schedule, which right now I do every other week. If I do it early, then I do the same process, including taking out whatever the fixed expense would have been. So there's actually, I end up like putting a lot of buffer in for my fixed expenses when I do that. And if that's still not enough and I'm borrowing from my emergency fund, then I have that at a separate bank. It takes 3 days. So it has to come through 3 days. And I have those 3 days to be like, do I really need this? Is this really how I want to spend that emergency fund? Because the other secret, right, is that the emergency fund is also where all my quarterly bonuses and annual bonuses come from. So if I take it out of the emergency fund, I'm reducing the bonus I'm giving myself too. So there's a lot of like, boundaries include following these exception processes, and you can design them differently for yourself, whatever it is that works for you. You just have to give yourself a way to slow down and recognize that you're doing something out of the ordinary. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, absolutely. When you look at it too, because I think people are like, oh, well, I have this amount, like a large sum, versus like having it in separate buckets of understanding, okay, I am breaking the rules, but there's a reason behind it. And if you're not doing it all the time, but it's that awareness piece, right? Of knowing like when we know where our money's going, we can make more educated decisions of like where we want to spend our money, even if we want to push through what we know we maybe like can hold off on.
And it can be super motivational too, because you'll go through this process and you go, well, I don't want to have to do that again. So either let's make an adjustment to whatever my priorities are, or let me go make more money so that next time one of these situations comes up, that there's more in that bucket for me to work with.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. I've been having so much fun with you, TJ. I feel like you're a wealth of knowledge and you really just understand money habits and just how we go about our day-to-day with our money. But if before we get into the rapid fire questions, my last question is, what is the best advice or tips that you can give for people that are in their business around money?
So this depends on where you are in your business, but number one thing is if you haven't opened a separate business bank account yet, please, 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 please do it. Go get an LLC and an EIN and go open the separate bank account. I don't care how many you open, just open one. And even if like you're not there yet, if you're like, oh, the LLC process is scary or whatever it is, open a separate personal account. Whatever you do, just separate the money between what's coming in and out of your business and your personal life, because, and there's like, there's legal reasons. It breaks the corporate veil. It's all of these things, like a whole bunch of jargon, but just for your sanity, to know whether or not you're funding your business with your like day job is huge. This was actually my honors thesis for college. I did this in sophomore year, but like we were helping this couple who had been operating their business for 4 to 5 years entirely out of the same checking account. They had no idea if this clothing business that they had been running was being funded by the husband's day job or not. Like they had no idea if they were profitable.
Wow.
And all you have to do is have a separate account for that.
Wise words. No, that's really true, because I know when, like, I'm sure it's a little different too if you're like a solopreneur and like you only have your business versus a day job. Does that matter as well? I'm curious.
It does, because you want to separate what your personal expenses are from your business. Mm-hmm. And it can get really messy for your bookkeeper or your tax accountant if you don't have them separate. And they'll charge you for it. Like some of them, like, you know, it'll take them, they'll bill you hourly or whatever it is. They will find a way to charge you. They may not tell you, but they will. And the process for like having the multiple bank accounts set up actually saves them a lot of time. It reduces how much time they spend on your accounts down to like 30 minutes a month if you do the separate bank accounts.
That's true. And one more question. Sorry, I thought of another one. because I know a lot of women here that are listening, a lot of them have multiple businesses. Mm-hmm. So do you suggest, like, if they have multiple businesses, there's an account for each business?
So that actually comes down to whether or not your business is like considered an active business versus a passive business. So what I do is and I would say you still go to like a tax lawyer or somebody and check with your particular circumstances, because once you get super big, the rules do change, right? Mm-hmm. But for most solopreneurs, if you like, my lines of business for active are my corporate and my money habits coaching. So those two, I actively work in those businesses every day. They live in the same set of accounts and they're under the same LLC with the same EIN and all of that. So they live in the same dashboard for me, and that's kind of how I fund some of my money coaching stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I also have rental real estate, and that's in a whole separate account, because you want this separation between the two and they're like tied to a whole separate LLC and all of those things, more for asset protection purposes, that if you get sued in one, you don't want like your assets on the other side to be at risk because of that lawsuit.
True. See, this is really good information. So I'm so glad you were on today, but we're going to jump into the rapid fire questions if you're ready for them.
Yes, let's go.
Okay. So the first question is, who is your hero?
My hero. So I always have trouble with this question. I like the Whitney Houston song goes through my head of like, I never found somebody to look up to. But I saw this question and I was like, I might finally have answers to this, right? Like, I recently started actually asking my parents about their journey immigrating to America, and like just like breaking down things that as a kid I took for granted, that this was just the way things were and things like that. I started calling them and asking them, hey, why did you come to America? Like, what was that like? All of those things. And I really have to say that like my mom is my hero in that, like, from those conversations, first of all, because she modeled for me that being the woman in the family is actually the person that like is most in charge of the money. That's what it was in my household, is that the woman was in charge, right? So yeah. I got to counteract the American idea that women are bad with money, because that's not what I saw in my household.
Right.
And then, like, as I mentioned earlier, that like she grew so much since I was a kid, that she came from Taiwan, where I recently learned she kind of considered herself like a foreigner in Taiwan because her family was originally from China. So she was the first generation in Taiwan. And then she came to America because that was like the whole American dream thing. And like a lot of foreigners like consider being like going to at least an American education is a lot better than education in China or Taiwan. So like she wanted that and convinced my dad to take the test to come and qualify for it. And my dad was so surprised because he didn't go to college. He went to trade school and he did really well. So like they're just like all these stories of like, if I think about it now, she came to America without the internet. The first time she flew into Texas was the first time she'd ever been on an airplane. Her English was decent, but like she didn't know anybody here. And somehow they got to the point where they have one rental property and their primary home that they paid off. They're both retired early by like 5 years or so, but still early, right? They're still supporting my brother. Like they raised me, like all these things, like mind blown.
Oh my gosh. What an incredible journey. Like I would love to talk to your parents. They sound so fascinating.
They would be confused why you cared.
Yeah, maybe, but that's incredible. What a story too, of just like overcoming adversity and everything that they had to face, I'm sure. Obviously, I don't know all of it, but just what they've accomplished too. And it's a testament to you, and I'm sure your brother as well.
Yeah, for sure.
And so what motivates you to work smarter?
What motivates me to work smarter is that I found, well, first of all, I think it's part of my like nature that I like efficiency, that I'll see something and want to make it better. If it like, I'm like waiting in line at a retail store and I'm like, this could be more efficient if X, Y, Z, blah, blah. And like, I totally just built on that by going to business school where they teach you some of these things. And, but like from a personal motivation standpoint, working smarter means that I get more time to rest, because a lot of my work is actually more in that strategic thinking space that has like nothing to do with whether I have hands on keyboard. It's actually about the time my brain has to think of new ideas or new strategies or like that creativity aspect. So the more efficient I am with the stuff that has to get done to get out of the way, the more time I give myself to be creative.
I love that. That was a good answer. If you were a superhero, what powers or power would you have?
So this one, like this is actually when I read like sci-fi fantasy books as a kid, I always imagined myself like snapping into the world and just like trying to like bump their heads together to like be like, because the thing about stories, interesting stories, are where there's some kind of misunderstanding, there's some miscommunication, somebody doesn't have the information, whatever it is, they come from different culture, whatever, that like that's what makes an interesting story. And I always wanted to go in there and just like explain it to them or just be like, why don't you understand actually this, they feel that, like whatever that is. So if I had a superpower, it would basically be like the power to give empathy to other people so that they could not miscommunicate.
I really appreciate that. Empathy is a topic that we don't really talk about enough, I think, but it's true. It's like being able to show them and be able to have that awareness. Like it always goes back to awareness, I feel like today. I've been saying that a million times, but it's true. It's when we are able to see it from a different perspective and like people can come together and actually talk through it versus not talk through it.
Yeah.
That is a very cool superpower. That's one of a kind. I haven't heard that one. So what is the most daring thing you've ever done?
The most daring. This is weird because like I feel like what most people would consider most daring are a lot of like me just being my authentic self and like being honest about me, but I did, we recently were recording this like after Memorial Day weekend, after so in the Phoenix area we have Phoenix Fan Fusion. It's an anime comic convention. Cool. And I love ours because there's panels and events where like you can volunteer to do performative things. So we have one called Strut Your Stuff. It's an 18 plus like striptease kind of thing where you dress up in costume and you do a striptease. And this past weekend, or not, 2 weekends ago at this point, I went up in my Mulan cosplay and did a striptease, and I grabbed somebody I met that day and made him like sit in a chair on the stage while I did it.
Wow. I don't know if I could do that. That sounds very daring.
I grew up doing Chinese cultural dance, tap dance, ballet. Like I have dance skills, right? Like it's not like I came out of nowhere with no like performance experience. So it's not necessarily a huge leap. It was more of like, oh, it's been 2 years since we did this and I have no plan. And I was just like,
just went with it. That is incredible though. You know, those are some of the best stories too and experiences when we just like dive right in.
Yeah.
And what is the phone app that you use the most?
So I would think it's probably a toss-up between the Kindle app and recently Facebook, because like half the time it's because I'm working. Like on Facebook is where I'm doing like all the social media work or commenting on other people's stuff. But I think the last time I looked at the little like wellness report my phone gives me of like which apps I use the most, it's the Kindle app.
Yeah. Well, what brings me to my next question is, what's the last book you've read?
The last book I read, okay, so right now I'm rereading Sweep in Peace by Alona Andrews. It's a sci-fi fantasy novel about like if all of our mythical creatures were actually aliens that visited Earth. So it's an interesting twist on like the vampire werewolf motif. And the Ilona Andrews is just like my go-to. The everything they write is absolutely amazing. They put so much thought into it. So they're my go-to like comfort read. I'm trying to think, what was the, I want to add like whatever my last nonfiction book was, but at this point I can't remember what it is.
That's all good. It sounds like a really interesting book though.
Yes,
very intriguing. So if you were to be an animal personality style, what animal would you describe yourself as?
Oh no. What would I be? So my go-to for this is I'm a horse in the Chinese zodiac. And and I wouldn't say that I'm like obsessed with horses at all, but to me they're like, they're a herd animal, but they're also like super free spirited and they love to run and be out in the wild, but they also like to be with each other. And I don't know, like, I don't know how to describe why or what my personality, like there's an independent streak there, but I definitely like strongly want to be part of my culture. And, and I'm just going to continue to identify that way because it's just part of like, I grew up thinking, yes, I'm a horse.
No, that's good. I think too, it's just, it shows like just the different types of animals, because there's so many different personality types too. And like, sometimes you can't pinpoint it, but you might have some similarities.
Yeah,
which it sounds like it resonates. And then my final question is, what is your favorite way to spend a day off? If you're not working, you don't have clients.
My favorite way to spend a day off, it depends on whether or not I'm feeling super introverted or not. It's usually involving like some kind of nap, first of all. Like, if I'm not doing anything, there's usually some kind of afternoon nap. I have a cat, so she likes to cuddle. And if I can get her to sit with me and we just both fall asleep, then that's perfect. I like to read or watch, I watch Let's Plays. So they're like watching other people play video games. It sounds ridiculous, but it's actually amazing. anime and what else? And if I'm feeling social, probably shopping.
Well, those are all, yeah.
Yes. So that's pretty much my, and, oh, and a bath and taking a bubble bath.
That sounds perfect. You know, going back to the video games, I've heard so many people like love doing that. I never knew because I never got into video games, but can, I just want to ask you really quickly, what is like the intrigue of it? Like how, like what for you at least?
So part of the intrigue is watching people who aren't good at it be like absolutely dumb. Like they make mistakes and you're sitting here like it's like watching a sport and like trying to coach from your couch. It's the same kind of concept of like, why did you do that XYZ? Or like you watch them get super mad and frustrated, or they just like to play pranks on each other if they're doing like multiplayer stuff. So that's most of the intrigue, especially because I like video games, but I choose not to play some either because they're not designed for people assigned female at birth. Just genetically, I can't see like depth of range. They don't design them for me for some of the AAA titles. And they can be super addictive and time consuming. And I choose not to spend my time that way. So the way I get to stay in that culture and enjoy these, what have become amazing pieces of art, really, these huge games, is to watch somebody else play them. So then I can learn about them. I know about the storylines in them. I get to see the art. I get to watch somebody entertaining do it who knows what the heck they're doing. And I don't have to be the frustrated person going like, why do I keep falling off this platform?
No, you really put it in perspective because I haven't heard it explained that way. Well, I've never really asked, but because the fact of like watching like a sporting event, how people really get into that versus like the video games, it makes perfect sense. So thank you for sharing that. I do have one final question. Where can people find you, hire you, and find out what you're up to?
So the best way to find me, I don't have a website for my money coaching business yet. I'm on Facebook as TJ Wey, so TJ space W-E-Y, and on Instagram at TJ.W-E-Y. I'm also on LinkedIn, and those are my three main platforms that you can find me on.
Perfect. Well, we'll definitely link it below so everyone can just click on it and find you. But thank you so much, TJ, for taking the time today to talk with us and sharing your incredible journey. And it's been an honor. So thank you.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you. And we'll see you all on the next video. Make sure to like, subscribe, and comment below. What was your biggest takeaway from TJ?